Welcome to Business Trip, a podcast exploring the future of mental health and wellness. I'm Greg Kubin, and my co-host is Matthias Serebrinski. We're partners at PsyMed Ventures, a fund investing in psychedelic medicine and frontier mental health. You've probably heard of the ketogenic diet as a weight loss trend. If you eat low-carb and high-fat foods, your body uses stored fat as energy. But there's a growing body of evidence that suggests that the ketogenic diet may be used to improve mental health and treat neurological conditions, ranging from epilepsy to bipolar disorder. Joining us today is Jan Bazuki, an advocate who is dedicating her life to exploring the intersection between mental health and metabolism, a new field called metabolic psychiatry. She's driven by a deeply personal experience with her son's successful recovery from bipolar disorder, primarily through a ketogenic diet. Jan and her family started the Bazuki Group, which uses philanthropy, impact investing, and storytelling to drive big change in mental health outcomes through diet and metabolic health. In this episode, we dive into the fascinating science and theories behind metabolic psychiatry. Jan shares several studies with promising results in metabolic interventions for various mental health conditions. We also explore Jan's philanthropic and investing platform, as well as opportunities for startups to build in this space. And now to the episode with Jan Bazuki.
Jan, welcome to Business Trip. Great to have you here. So let me start by asking you why you're interested in this field.
First of all, thank you for having me. It's exciting to be here and share what we know about metabolic psychiatry. It was a very personal story that got us into this field, which we didn't really know was a field. And actually, metabolic psychiatry per se has not really been recognized as a field until maybe a year ago, 2 years ago. Our son was diagnosed with bipolar 1 with psychotic features when he was 19. He was a freshman at UC Berkeley. And we went through basically the mental health madness of America. He was hospitalized 4 times. He was prescribed 29 different medications, treated by many healthcare practitioners in and out of treatment centers, residential, partial hospitalization, and just couldn't get him well. After a couple of years, he got insight and he started to really work hard, which meant he understood he had a disorder of the brain. He started to put in place lifestyle interventions on his own, including essentially everything except diet. He was compliant on 5 different medications. He was exercising. He was doing CBT and DBT regularly. So seeing a therapist, seeing his psychiatrist, really living a very clean life, not drinking, not smoking. And yet he still wasn't well. And then I happened to meet somebody who had used a ketogenic diet to try to lose weight. And suddenly his lifelong bipolar symptoms had started to resolve. This is someone who's actually a mental health investor. He has a syndicate. And so my son was game. He wanted to try it. By then he was 24. He went on the diet almost 2.5 years ago now, January of 2021. And within 4 months, his symptoms had pretty much completely resolved. And they have never come back. He has stayed in nutritional ketosis for the most part.
When in ketosis, the body relies on fat for energy instead of the sugars from carbohydrates. The ketogenic diet, which is low carb and high fat, is one way to induce ketosis. Another is by fasting.
He doesn't really measure ketones anymore, but he doesn't eat a lot of carbs either. So ketogenic diet, high in fat, moderate in protein, and very low in carbohydrates. And that's any kind of carbohydrates. So really the only carbs he eats are a little bit of berries, some and low carb vegetables, low glycemic index vegetables. And that has enabled him to stay completely well and to taper off his medication. So he's on about half the medication load that he was on and continues to taper. So really, that transformed our vision of what might be possible in treating these very serious mental illnesses. And my husband's company, my husband is the CEO and founder of Roblox. Roblox became a publicly traded company like a couple months after he went on the diet. And so all of a sudden, we knew we had to use our resources to further this field, really to try to establish the field of metabolic psychiatry. The term was coined by Shivani Sethi at Stanford. She had a clinic, the first clinic called a metabolic psychiatry clinic. And I actually think she has the trademark, but she has very generously shared that with what is becoming an entire new field.
Wow. It's almost one of those things that people would be like, no, it's not true. I couldn't believe this. I wonder how many of these things are also like hidden in plain sight in terms of interventions that are not the mainstream way of practicing psychiatry. It's just fascinating to hear that.
In the beginning, we couldn't believe it. We kept saying to each other, could this really be it? It was a fairly controlled experiment, though, because he had everything else in place. It was the only thing that changed. And so we knew after several months that there was no question that it was being in ketosis that was making him better.
Well, how does this modality work and what makes it effective for treating psychiatric disorders?
Lots of theories and some that have more of an evidence base, more of a mechanistic evidence base than others. But we have 100 years of evidence that a metabolic ketogenic intervention is really a fasting mimicking diet. So what you're achieving, the same thing that you would achieve if you fasted, which is to restrict carbohydrates to a level where the liver produces ketones that the brain and the body can use for energy. So that's kind of the fundamental mechanism for how it worked. And so in epilepsy, we have 100 years of evidence of efficacy. It's especially well studied in pediatric epilepsy, mostly because it's easier to put a child on a ketogenic diet. And typically this was done in a hospital. And these are very high fat diets. We now use something more like a modified Atkins diet, which is not so high in fat, maybe 60%. We have evidence from early stages of dementia. Cognitive impairment can improve just by using MCT oil. We have evidence in Parkinson's. We have evidence in brain cancer. The evidence in psychiatry is brand new. There hadn't been a single funded study since 1965. There was this very small pilot trial in schizophrenia, 1965. No other funded studies until Stanford started theirs maybe 3 years ago. And now we funded 4 additional trials, really trying to get at the mechanism for why it works. For sure, there's a brain energy rescue aspect to it. So we have decades of research demonstrating that in serious mental illnesses, oftentimes the glucose pathways are impaired. So the brain is not good at using glucose for energy. Most people, that's the only source of energy their brains will ever have because we all eat carbohydrates all day, so we're never in ketosis. Our livers are never producing ketones, which is a very viable alternate fuel and, in fact, is a more efficient fuel, especially for the brain. So all of a sudden, you cut your carbohydrate intake, go into ketosis, the brain that can't use glucose well can start to use ketones, and suddenly brain function can return. This can happen very, very quickly. We have one colleague who is now running a trial. He's the co-PI in a trial at University of Edinburgh. He had bipolar depression for 20 years, his entire adult life. And when he went on a ketogenic diet to treat his obesity, within 3 days, he tells the story of sitting on the bus and feeling like the lights went on in his brain for the first time in his adult life. And he said to himself, my God, this is how normal people must feel. He had never felt that way. And he's now 7 years in remission from very serious case of bipolar 1 with decades of depression. We have other hypotheses about how it works, improves mitochondrial function, reduces oxidative stress, reduces inflammation, and various other pathways. When people talk about trying to study the ketogenic diet so we can understand the pathway, so we can develop a drug to mimic it, it's working on probably 20 or 30 different mechanisms. Even if we could understand them all, I'm not convinced that we could create pharmaceuticals that would mimic them.
Very interesting how the ketogenic intervention works is on the biological side, and that may be enough.
What is not well understood is that just because a symptom is behavioral does not mean that it has a psychological cause or an experiential cause. And why would we then expect that just because the symptom is behavioral, the way to get at it somehow is through therapy? For serious mental illnesses, I don't think there's any way you're going to therapize yourself out of them without a change in the way the brain is functioning. And now for our son, there were many, it wasn't that diet caused his disorder. It was probably one factor, but there were many different experiences in his life, in his environment, that were impacting, triggering his disorder to come on board. Stress, for sure, a girlfriend in high school, marijuana, alcohol, nicotine, super tough academic load when he was a freshman at Berkeley, joined a fraternity, got mono, got strep, went back to college, manic episode, boom. We have biological responses to our experiences. So I don't think you can really separate the environment from the way that the brain and body respond to the environment. So I think it's all tied together. But for sure, yeah, people who think that you can't use a biological intervention like this to treat what is a mental disorder, I mean, that to me is just doesn't make any sense. Of course you can.
Yeah, even, you know, the word mental disorder, it could just be called brain disorder. What we're realizing is that this distinction between neurology and psychiatry, it's a lot more arbitrary than what it seems from outside, right? There's like those lines are a lot more blurred. So what is brain disease? What is mental health disorder? It's not so clear, right? And it's okay, you know, we need to put things into labels and boxes and DSM indications to get coverage, insurance coverage. But ultimately, when it comes to research and treatments, things are not so discrete and black and white.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I just read Nolan Williams at Stanford, who's one of the leaders in neurostimulation. They just came out with a plea for a combined program within medical schools, which is just brain science, brain medicine that combines neurology and psychiatry. If neurology and psychiatry were one field, we might have tried a ketogenic intervention 100 years ago instead of 100 years later.
Are you seeing with either Matt or others improvement when the ketogenic diet is combined with therapy, meditation, other modalities?
For sure. And I think we don't want to mislead people into thinking that all you have to do is go on a ketogenic diet and then you can go on with your typical lifestyle as it was. My perspective now is that I wish we had started with the ketogenic intervention because it was the very last thing that our son Matt put into place. And I think everything else would have been easier if he had already healed his brain with a ketogenic intervention. It would have been easier to quit smoking and drinking. It would have been easier to meditate for sure. He had a daily meditation practice in place when he went on the diet. It would have been easier to get off medications, absolutely. We know that it increases GABA in the brain, which makes it a lot easier to get off medications.
GABA is a neurotransmitter in the brain that decreases impulses between nerve cells. It plays an important role in reducing anxiety and promoting relaxation, making it essential for maintaining mental health.
And I think that that's an area I hope we can study more in the future. Can we use ketogenic interventions, nutritional ketosis, to help people withdraw from some of these medications without the terrible withdrawal effects that people go through with SSRIs and antipsychotics and benzodiazepines and opioids?
So, Jen, you mentioned that Matt had some short-term effects from being in nutritional ketosis, but then there are these other long-term effects. Can you share a little bit more that kind of like chronological order of effects?
Sure. I think that the brain energy rescue from ketones is what caused the immediate improvement. So he went on the diet January 4th. He remembers this day because it was such a dramatic change in his diet, and we decided to do it all at once. So just boom, he went from eating a ton of carbs one day to not. And he was in ketosis in a couple of days. And he noticed right away that he had better mental clarity. The biggest change after 2 months was that in March, which for people with bipolar disorder, spring can be very destabilizing. In fact, his psychiatrist, he does all of his inpatient hours in March because that's when all of his patients get hospitalized. And Matt had to go up to 5 times his antipsychotic medication dose every spring. And that spring, He stayed at 5 milligrams, never went up, never had even the stitch of hypomania, no, zero symptoms. And that's how we knew something was very profound happening. But he still had anxiety, irritability, lower level depression, some other cognitive difficulties, executive function didn't come roaring back. That took time. But within 4 months, I would say he was symptom free. He had really strong executive function, and that didn't come back fully. Just gradually over the last 2 years, really, until his executive function, his strategic thinking, his ability to manage his life, his calmness, his ability to handle interpersonal interactions. I can't even describe the transformation from when he was ill. If you had not known him before he got sick, you would think he was a different person. To me, he's back to the person he was. But anybody who met him after he was 19, they would think he was a different person now. And we think that's because the mitochondria is regenerating and healing the brain.
Mitochondria are organelles that generate most of the chemical energy of a cell.
The field is converging around Chris Palmer with his book, Brain Energy. He certainly focuses on that as probably the main mechanism.
So you've been focused on this domain for a couple of years now. Have you come across an individual who experiences bipolar disorder who tried the ketogenic diet and it did not work for them to ameliorate symptoms?
I have not personally. I asked Chris Palmer this question when we were thinking about putting Matt on the diet. Dr. Palmer is the physician who helped our son. He did it pro bono. He wasn't officially taking any patients, but he helped us. I said, how many patients have you treated with bipolar 1 who have gone on the diet and not gotten better, who have stuck with it for at least 4 months? And he said, 0. Some people will improve somewhat. Everyone will improve a little bit. And a lot of it is dependent on the diagnosis. What I have been hearing is that depression is much more heterogeneous than bipolar disorder or schizophrenia even, and that there could be lots of different causes of depression. Bipolar is probably more biological, more heritable, for sure. And so it may be that people with bipolar disorder are more likely to improve on a ketogenic diet. We don't have the data yet. The very first studies are just wrapping up. The data is being analyzed now, and they will be presented.
Can you share more about the studies and what they're exploring?
So 5 studies either completed or underway, with a couple more to come. The first one was done at Stanford, and Dr. Shabani Sethi, she had about 24 patients go through in 2 cohorts looking at bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. We funded a trial at the University of Edinburgh. They are looking at bipolar disorder, and I think they had about 25 patients go through. And that was a 12-week intervention. And then we have a study at James Cook University in Australia. The reason that we were introduced to the principal investigators there, Zoltan Sarnai, he was a basic researcher who had studied ketogenic diet in schizophrenia in mice, and he had never been able to get funding to study humans. So we were able to fund a small pilot trial there. That's just getting underway. And then there is a study at the Ohio State University. This one is looking at major depression in college students. They've started to enroll patients, and they've had very good adherence with the patients who have been enrolled thus far. I think this is a very important study. We have such a crisis on college campuses with major depression. So I'm very optimistic that we'll at least learn, can we keep people in that population on a ketogenic diet, and we'll learn what the outcome is. And then the last study is at UCSF looking at cognitive function, and they're using functional MRI to see what's happening in the brain with patients with both schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. And they've had about 10 people so far enrolled. So they're all small pilot studies. We're trying to get through these studies, learn from the principal investigators what worked, what didn't work, what's the right diet, what are the right ways to measure ketones, what's the right time to measure ketones, what are the right outcome measures, what kind of support do people need, what should the control diet be, and then the hope is to launch a much larger multi-site randomized controlled trial, possibly international.
Assuming that there's evidence that shows efficacy for larger sample sets, we need more ketogenic dietary options. Like when I hear a college campus, I just imagine all like the chicken sandwiches and fries and whatnot. Maybe there's entrepreneurial opportunities to create brands and offerings. Again, we need the science to first demonstrate that this really works, but feels like there's a gap in the marketplace.
There is absolutely a gap in the marketplace. I cannot tell you how many people come to us. Where can I get meals? Where can I get keto meals? There are several companies starting up, but it's a little bit of a mixed field, and I think there's a huge opportunity there. I think for a psychiatric population, the food delivery is going to be really important, because if you are too depressed to get out of bed, or you're manic, or you're psychotic, chances are, you know, you're not going to be measuring your macros too carefully. So this is a really important question. I think there are huge opportunities, and we've basically been talking to anybody who has any interest in possibly building a company in this field.
But building on top of what you said, even the idea of a meal delivery service and who pays for it, if you think about how much it costs for payers, patient with an SMI, a serious mental illness, it just thinking out loud or dreaming, even the payer could pay for like literally their whole daily meal plan, and that most likely will be more affordable or less costly for the payer than treating someone that has a psychotic break or any type of kind of acute symptoms of like either psychosis or bipolar disorder. So there's like many ways to think of what is missing, what the gaps are, and who would even pay for it, right? It's not just like someone having to spend hundreds of dollars a month. This could go in multiple different ways.
Payers include insurance companies and government plans like Medicare and Medicaid. They're organizations that finance and cover the cost of healthcare services for individuals or groups.
Yes, it's interesting. The NIH has just issued a food as medicine initiative that is going to fund food as medicine science and other community health projects. And I think we need to have them direct some of those funds to develop some of these interventions. You're absolutely right about the payers saving money. Matt's first hospitalization, he's at Stanford for 10 days in the lockdown psychiatric ward. We met with his attending psychiatrist on day 9 of his 10-day study. She never had time to meet with us. The bill for that, which we did not pay, which our insurance company paid through Roblox, was $90,000. And I can tell you that could pay for a lot of years of ketogenic meals, even if they're really good, high-quality ketogenic meals with no vegetable oil and organic everything and grass-fed everything. So there's a huge opportunity there, but it's definitely the dream.
That could be a way around this, where instead of having to get the payers, you know, fully on board and they do the risk analysis, you take a more value-based care approach where you go to payers and say, hey, I'll take care of this patient, right? I will absorb all the costs. You just pay me a fixed sum of money. And so if, you know, a company thinks that is more cost effective or cost efficient than like the standard of care, then that's it. Obviously, that requires a bunch of money and it's like hard to have a lean startup, right? But going back to this idea of like meal plans and also the trial designs, does metabolic psychiatry equal ketogenic diets? Is there like a low carb version you mentioned? It's interesting to think about this because adherence with things that are very strict is really hard in general. So I'd like to think how we can make things easier for folks.
So this is a very important question. I think the answer is we don't know yet, and there's probably a lot of individual variation. The first thing I would say is that when we conceive metabolic psychiatry, we are thinking of it not just for lifestyle interventions like nutritional ketosis or metabolic therapies, but also other kinds of interventions like metformin, for example, which is not used in psychiatry unless somebody is trying to treat insulin resistance specifically. So I think we need to look at this more broadly and consider whether there are drug interventions that are typically used in metabolic health that might be applicable to psychiatric illness as well. And our whole hypothesis is that metabolic health and mental health are not two separate things. They're actually connected, body and brain. On the diet side, my guess is that ketosis is going to matter, especially in the beginning. And it might be that it's the similar case to what we have in epilepsy, where people are put on a very serious, strict ketogenic diet. Their ketones are measured for some period of time. In epilepsy, it might be between 2 and 5 years. And after that point, some patients get off the diet, never have another seizure, never take another medication. And that is actually true for the family that started the Charlie Foundation, which supported ketogenic diet as an intervention for pediatric epilepsy. My son would say that he thinks being very strict for the first year healed his brain, and he has not been so strict in that he has not been measuring ketones. He has also never had a piece of bread or a bite of rice or a potato or anything in 2.5 years. But we don't know if he's in ketosis all the time now or not. I will give you one plug for being strict enough to get into nutritional ketosis for an extended period of time. Brett Scher, who is the host of our Metabolic Mind channel, just published a wonderful video based on a case study that was published of a woman in her 40s. She had Down syndrome, but she had lived a lovely, wonderful life, rich life, and then she got dementia in her 40s. And she was profoundly struggling. I mean, she had lost most function. She couldn't be left alone. She had seizures. She had all kinds of neurological issues emerging. And she was also obese. So they put her on a low-carb diet, paleo diet, that was about 100 grams of carbs. And she lost 100 pounds and was doing very well metabolically. But it wasn't until they dropped the carbs to 20 grams a day, they started measuring nutritional ketosis. Her brain function started to recover. Her neurological symptoms started to resolve. And it's a wonderful story. And the mother actually tells this story on the video. She said that when her daughter had been in ketosis for some period of time, she spoke the first 3-syllable word she had ever spoken in her entire life. She said, "I understand." And her mother just started to cry because she'd never used a 3-syllable word before. So it may be that for the brain, ketosis really matters. We're going to learn more about that as we go. And I'm sure there is, as I said, individual variation, but it might matter a lot.
Interesting. There's such a focus now on fake meat and lab-grown meat. I suppose we could do the same with fake carbs.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. Cauliflower pizza crust and cauliflower rice, and cauliflower's making a comeback.
Be on the lookout. So I think it'd be really good if you could just first introduce what your initiative and goal is with the Bazooki Group in terms of the philanthropic and or investment view.
So we founded Bazooki Group as our family's philanthropic venture, which includes impact investing and venture philanthropy and grant making, and also community building and storytelling. We're backing several documentaries at this point. So our goal is to use whatever tools are available to try to build this field of metabolic psychiatry and deliver interventions that work for people living with not just serious mental illness, but any kind of mental disorder. It's a broad vision. We have invested in several companies early on in our journey a couple years back, before Matt had discovered that this intervention was going to work for him. So several mental health startups. And then we kind of backed off and said, we need to have some dry powder for the companies that can really come forward and deliver ketogenic interventions specifically for serious mental illness. We are looking to partner with anyone who wants to do that from any angle, venture capitalists, entrepreneurs, other philanthropists, other venture philanthropists, and open to all ideas that people have as to how to achieve this.
So from a business standpoint, you mentioned that you are skeptical of a pharmacological intervention that mimics the ketogenic diet, like basically a small molecule that in some way mimics that. What are some of the viable commercial strategies or companies that you're seeing out there, both the ones you partnered and others that maybe you haven't found your perfect match yet?
Right. There are a lot of interesting companies in the metabolic health space. There are companies developing devices, Keto Mojo being one of them, for measuring ketones and glucose levels, provide CGMs, continuous glucose monitoring, and a whole community and apps and social support. And as a very small company called BioCoach, their model is coaching, but it's wraparound so that, and they have AI running on top of that, their coaching platform. So I think that how AI can be used is going to be interesting to see how that evolves. You know, photos of food that could automatically calculate the macronutrient ratio could be very interesting. We'll see who has some great ideas here.
The idea of venture philanthropy and doing something that then returns money that you can reinvest into more initiatives is fascinating. I'm personally really excited about these other ways of doing philanthropy that are more self-sustaining. With that in mind, many of the things you said are around supporting a ketogenic diet. I'm curious if you have explored other, let's just say, wilder, more sci-fi type of ideas that are like, you know, maybe 10, 20 years in the future, but you're planting the seeds now.
Pie and sky. The gene therapy idea is interesting. And I really think this is going to boil down to epigenetics. If you look at the number of genes that contribute to serious mental illness, say bipolar disorder, it's hundreds and hundreds of genes. And you could calculate a polygenic risk score. I personally think there's nothing wrong with the genes. There's something with the way the genes are interacting with the environment. Because look at our sun. You could say, oh, we know bipolar is genetic. We actually don't have any bipolar in the family that we're aware of, at least not bipolar one. And he was told, it's genetic, it's chronic, you're going to have this for the rest of your life, you're going to need to take meds for the rest of your life, etc. One would think, okay, there absolutely is something wrong with his genes. This is a genetic illness, but he is now thriving. I think there's something particular about certain genetic predispositions that make certain environmental conditions extremely challenging. It may be easier to just address the environmental conditions, but do it very, very precisely. So what is the advice that a person recently diagnosed with bipolar gets as to what they should be doing differently in their life? Diet and exercise is important, not defined. But if you have bipolar disorder and you get the directive to manage your sleep, you don't know how to do that. I mean, you literally can't do that if you're manic. Our son didn't sleep for 2 weeks, literally did not sleep for 2 weeks at all. Nobody believes that, but if you've seen a person with bipolar mania, the circadian dysfunction is so profound that there's actually no requirement to sleep. All of that has resolved in nutritional ketosis, but he also wears blue light blocking glasses at night to manage his environment. He gets up in the morning and gets sunlight at 7:30 because we know that light therapy is so profound in bipolar disorder. Exercise is absolutely key, but you can't get exercise if you're catatonically depressed. So I think we have to start with the intervention that we know is going to work, which is treating the metabolic dysfunction first. We don't need FDA approval. We don't need to go through drug trials for 10 years. We don't need to develop the small molecule. We just need to deliver it at scale safely and provide the support that is needed. So we're probably going to be focusing on that. That said, we just made this super cool announcement today about a platform called NeuroBlox, which was inspired by Roblox. It's a principal investigator, a neuroscientist at Stony Brook, who had done a study about ketones and brain network stabilization. She had used functional MRI to compare brain scans of people using glucose for fuel versus ketones for fuel. And Matt had just gotten better when I heard her in a podcast, and then I looked up her paper and I reached out to her. And she was inspired by Roblox to develop this NeuroBlox platform, which will essentially be a way to model metabolic neuroscience in blocks of code that any neuroscientist, even if they have no computer science training, can then model a brain network intervention and hope to deliver personalized medicine for brain-based disorders. So that's kind of our pie in the sky, super high tech, long-term, 10-year, try something really bold vision.
Cool. Really cool. Congrats on that. A couple other questions on the business side. Why isn't this mainstream yet? Is it really due to the lack of large-scale studies? Is it due to the fact that just not that many people are yet on the ketogenic diet to treat mental health? Like, is it an awareness challenge?
I think that the answer is yes, yes, and yes. I think, one, we have most of medicine fearing ketogenic diet because it's going to raise LDL and cause cardiovascular disease. So that's one battle that we're fighting. We have all been told to fear fat for 50 years. That's another thing. In our circles, people are eating high-fat diets now. Most people we know are low-carb, but in most of the world, that whole low-fat thing is still very entrenched. So I think that's part of why this is an uphill battle. That's starting to chip away, and I'm very optimistic that eventually it does work for so many people that it will become obvious that fat is good for the brain and good for the body, and that carbs and sugar are really the enemy here. We have to battle big food and big pharma. This is not in big pharma's interest, and it's not in big food's interest. And that we don't have the studies, which is important. If you're a psychiatrist and you've never heard of this, you're unlikely to prescribe it if you don't have at least one randomized controlled trial to point to for the diagnosis that you're treating. I think that's really important to do. And we will learn a ton. We hope to be able to identify the biomarkers that could predict who might respond, make sure we understood the risks. In bipolar disorder, there is a risk of elevated brain energy, which could trigger hypomania. And so that's one thing that we wanted to be conscious of and that we need to learn more about. And then I think just hearing other people's stories, so the storytelling part, the community building part is huge. And that's why we started Metabolic Mind, to interview scientists, to promote the science, to give people practical information about how to do this, and then to share people's stories.
The idea is to like advance knowledge and advance science in places where most people are not there yet. I love the work that you're doing around this.
I guess one quick question is around some of the collaborations with companies like Akili or Ozmind, Magnus Medical. How are you thinking about collaborations with companies, and what kind of companies are you looking to collaborate with looking forward?
Anyone who wants to do anything in metabolic psychiatry or metabolic neuroscience, I would say those are the two main areas that we would be focusing on. And Akili was interesting because there was a gamification angle to it. Ozmind was interesting because we knew their medical director, Carlene McMillan. And I was just interested in a kind of a cutting edge psychiatry network, which is what they are doing. And no, we've been talking to them a bit about metabolic psychiatry, introducing metabolic psychiatry to their clinics. Health Rhythms is a super interesting company that we're invested in, where they're employing the way people use their smartphones to evaluate and predict mood. And I have a lot of high hopes for that company. And as we try to build out a metabolic psychiatry learning health network of some kind, that would be an ideal tool to have. The users don't have to do anything. It's just how you use your phone, how you're talking into your phone when you wake up, how often you go outside. And they have 30 different measures that they're tracking. And their data is really impressive. It's as good as conventional treatment in predicting depression relapse. And then they provide automatic interventions. So companies like that on the cutting edge of health innovation. Mental health innovation specifically. And then Magnus, we had known Williams, he treated our son, and we were just very optimistic about their RTMS protocol, which is a neurostimulation protocol, non-invasive neurostimulation for major depression. Their results are astounding for major depression. And people who failed years of treatment, failed ECT, and within a week of TMS, they're alive for the first time in decades. And that got FDA approval, fast-track approval, and I'm very hopeful about that technology for major depression. And probably the riskiest, most controversial area of our work, but there was a case report of using ketogenic diet plus ketamine in anorexia. That led to a 5-person, very small pilot trial of ketogenic diet plus ketamine for anorexia, very successful. We have decided to disentangle those and do just the ketogenic diet study first, which will soon be announced at a university in Southern California. So a larger study of nutritional ketosis for anorexia. But it's very interesting, the add-on ketamine therapy, which was very successful for the first 6 patients. Mm. We're also looking at a potential study combining TMS and following it with ketogenic intervention to extend the duration of effect.
So shall we move to the rapid fire? Let's have some fun. So my first question is, have you tried the ketogenic diet yourself?
Yes. My husband and I went on it when Matt went on it, and I'm never going back.
So you're still in ketosis?
Yeah.
Why are you never going back?
Oh, I lost 20 pounds for the first time in life. I'm not a yo-yo dieter, so it was a huge benefit.
Cool. What's one misconception about mental health disorders?
That they are psychological and require strictly psychological interventions.
What is the next big project that you're working on?
We're trying to construct consensus guidelines for using nutritional ketosis for serious mental illness.
What drives you to do this versus playing golf or something else that you could be doing right now?
That is a really good question, and I'm not sure I have a good answer. I ask myself this every day. Why am I not just going out to lunch or writing a novel? I was a novelist before Matt got sick. So I'm hoping to write a memoir of his story and our family's story.
Do you feel this may be a way for you to heal about your lived experience?
No. Every time I go back into that material, these are notes that I wrote during the 5 years Matt was sick. I feel the trauma all over again. So I'm not sure it's healing. It's more that I hope to share a story of hope with families like ours.
I was just reflecting on your life path, and it's interesting to me how 26 years ago you had a child. This is not something you were probably expecting in why you were having a child, but now here you are both helping your own child, but now also helping potentially many, many other people in the work that you're doing. So it's like a reminder about the unfolding of life and the mystery of life. And sometimes we just feel a call.
Matt and I went to an event last night, and he spoke beautifully. And in the way back, he said, "Mom, I just gave you something to do for the rest of your life. You should be grateful." I am. I'm grateful.
Yeah. Well, we're grateful for you coming into the show, Jen, and the work that you do. And we look forward to collaborating and working together.
Yep, absolutely. It's wonderful talking with you both.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Business Trip, a podcast exploring the future of mental health and wellness. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SciMedVentures. And if you're building a company in frontier mental health, hit us up at hi@scimed.ventures, which you can find in the show notes. I'm Greg Kubin, and my co-host is Matthias Serebrinski. Our editor is Jonathan Davis, and production is led by Caitlin Nair. Sound design and engineering came from Nico Ray. Our theme music is by Dorian Love, and additional music credits are in the show notes. This is Business Trip. Thanks for tripping with us. We'll see you next time.